A teenager sits at her desk, headphones on, scrolling through her phone. To her parents, she looks like any modern teen, absorbed, perhaps too absorbed, in her digital life. But here's what they can't see: the anxiety coursing through her as she calculates whether to delete last week's post that only got 47 likes. The careful editing of a comment to a friend, knowing her mom might read it later. The weight of performing an identity that feels increasingly distant from who she actually is. This is the reality of growing up today, an existence where privacy has become a quaint relic of the past, where every misstep can be screenshot and weaponized, where the line between protection and surveillance has blurred beyond recognition. We've created a world where children must develop authentic selves while living in a digital fishbowl, constantly observed by parents, schools, peers, and algorithms that never forget. When scandals erupt, parents reflexively install monitoring software. 61% check browsing history, 48% read texts, 43% demand passwords. Nearly a third of college students still have their locations tracked. We equate surveillance with safety, believing coordinates prevent danger. The uncomfortable truth? Visibility rarely eases anxiety. Instead, it maintains worry while preventing children from developing judgment. Consider the mother who discovered through tracking that her 17-year-old frequently visited a girl's house, coordinates without context, transforming curiosity into suspicion. The resentment cuts deep. If you read my texts, that's personal, not just for me, but for the person I'm texting with, one teen explained. Many teens accept location tracking more readily than message monitoring. Some even track parents back. Location feels practical. Reading conversations feels like betrayal. Most damaging, surveillance only catches mistakes after they happen, a reactive tool masquerading as proactive parenting. Schools have embraced surveillance enthusiastically. Class Dojo operates in 95% of U.S. elementary schools, gamifying behavior through points. Students earn points for working hard while losing them for not staying seated. These systems measure outcomes without understanding development. They don't teach skills, and struggling children collect negative points, sometimes facing public shame. Middle and high schools deploy grading systems like PowerSchool that push real-time notifications. Research from Challenge Success found 10% of middle schoolers check grades multiple times daily, with another 20% checking daily. As Tamara shared, "Sometimes my mom would know the grade I got before I did. I'd worry, am I going to get in trouble?" Education transforms into a game where maintaining grades trumps learning. Social media has fundamentally altered how teens construct their identities. Many young people crowdsource their personality, creating digital versions that increasingly overshadow their authentic selves. The pressure is relentless. 40% of teens feel compelled to post only attractive content about themselves. The mathematics of social approval, likes, comments, follower counts, has quantified what was once subjective. A third of girls and women refuse to post unedited photos. Boys face unique pressures, expected to appear effortlessly cool while secretly caring deeply about their image. Dr. Eva Telzer's research reveals why this matters. Adolescence represents a critical period where digital platforms actively shape neural pathways through constant social feedback. Managing an online presence becomes exhausting social labor, yet opting out risks genuine isolation. Content creator Jana Faley describes it as a job that never ends. Zephyrus, formerly super awesome Sylvia, struggled when his previous online identity caused severe gender dysphoria after transitioning, trapped by a digital past he'd outgrown. The permanence of digital footprints means today's identity exploration gets carved in stone rather than sketched in sand. Parents must help children navigate this reality by providing genuine validation offline. At workshops nationwide, nearly every child steps into the circle when asked if their parents posted embarrassing photos online. High schooler Malaya discovered unflattering orchestra photos on her mother's Facebook. "People make fun of me for playing violin." This sharenting, parents sharing their children's lives online, reveals our values through what and how often we post. One PTA president stopped posting after learning her daughter's friends teased her about mom's affectionate birthday posts. Writer Christy Tate refused her daughter's request to remove articles about her, arguing for her rights as an artist. Many readers sided with her daughter. This raises fundamental questions. When writing about parenthood, can we avoid exposing our children's struggles? Does each post serve genuine connection or our own validation? Even Gwyneth Paltrow's teenage daughter publicly called her out for posting without permission. The solution lies in creating a family editorial policy that gives children agency over what's shared. Today's middle schoolers understand small privacy within their immediate network more intuitively than abstract big privacy issues like data mining. When children have input on what's shared, privacy becomes a shared pursuit rather than a battle. When explicit images circulate or personal struggles become public, the consequences can devastate young lives. Yet culture simultaneously celebrates online vulnerability, creating confusion where reception varies dramatically by popularity and platform. According to a Lurie Children's Hospital survey, 52% of parents feel uncomfortable with how their teens portray themselves online, particularly regarding lack of privacy and tendency to overshare. Young people share to define identities and connect with peers. Coming out videos have transformed from emotional revelations to casual TikToks. Disclosing neurodiversity, mental health conditions, or trauma connects them with supportive communities. Discord servers offer safe spaces for intersecting identities. Some share to reduce stigma, like #BlackAt accounts documenting racist school experiences. Yet this openness carries profound risks. Unlike adult public figures, children lack maturity to handle backlash and face decades of potential consequences. Dr. Nessie worries that digital spaces dedicated to specific challenges can reinforce negative worldviews. Dr. Ken Ginsberg explains there's a significant difference between communicating with trusted friends versus posting publicly. Sacred stories should be reserved for those who've proven trustworthy. The key lies in teaching intentional sharing, helping kids make empowered choices about what to disclose and to whom, understanding that momentary empowerment may have lasting implications. In our gotcha culture, teens' impulsive mistakes can be instantly captured and shared globally. Nearly 15% of kids ages 12 to 17 have sent explicit messages, with 27% receiving them. Teens sext for complex reasons, seeking pleasure, impressing crushes, signaling romantic interest, or succumbing to pressure. Research distinguishes between non-pressured sexting, freely chosen, minimal consequences, and pressured sexting, coerced, leading to stress and depression. The most harmful scenarios involve sharing private images without consent. A sexual double standard means boys often gain status from possessing explicit images, while girls face humiliation. Rather than using scare tactics, teach clear consent boundaries. Middle schoolers must learn that sharing explicit images without permission is unethical and illegal. When discovering consensual sexting, stay calm and ask, "How are you feeling about it?" to discuss emotions. When a teen's image has been circulated, they need support, not discipline. This trauma often leads to depression and suicidal thoughts. Beyond sexting, teens make other online mistakes: crude gestures, inappropriate videos, racist content. College athlete Charlotte DeVries lost her UNC spot after a racial slur resurfaced years later. Adults must avoid weaponizing social media against kids. Public shaming permanently marks a child's worst moment. Truly remorseful kids benefit more from restorative actions, personal apologies, education, genuine reflection that teach character rather than simply don't get caught. We've normalized surveillance in the name of safety while undermining the independence we claim to prepare children for, forcing them to perform perfect digital identities while discovering who they actually are. True safety comes from building relationships where children feel safe confiding in us, not from monitoring every digital move. Teach consent, empathy, and ethical behavior, because being decent matters, not because colleges might be watching. Allow children privacy to make mistakes, experiment with identity, and develop genuine self-regulation rather than performing compliance under constant observation. Advocate collectively against excessive surveillance in schools, weaponization of social media against children, and toxic narratives that treat teenagers as problems to manage rather than humans to mentor. Respect your children's privacy while teaching them to set boundaries. Focus on character development over external consequences, and hold them accountable without permanent shame. Your child doesn't need a perfect digital footprint. They need freedom to be imperfect, guidance to be ethical, and trust to become who they're meant to be. In a world demanding performance, give them the radical gift of being genuinely seen. The goal isn't raising children who never make mistakes online. It's raising adults with the moral compass, resilience, and authenticity to navigate whatever world awaits them.